Sometimes we might think of market price action as a rubber band. It stretches in both directions, and whenever potentially overstretched, has the tendency to snap back in the opposite direction. Now, this concept, though not a perfect analogy for market price action by any means, has personally fascinated me for years. So our team did some research on 286 tickers to see if markets becoming overly stretched in one direction versus and compared to their different short and long-term moving averages can help us learn anything about reversals and momentum. And what we found was not what I expected. So let's dig in together.
You're listening to the Option Alpha podcast from optionalpha.com, where we show you how to make smarter trades, learn how the stock market really works, and generate consistent monthly income. Now, your host and head trader at optionalpha.com, Kirk Duplessis.
Hey everyone, this is Kirk here again from optionalpha.com, working every single week to make this the most popular investing podcast offered online because it's based on one thing and one thing only, and that's helping you consistently place smarter trades. So thank you so much for tuning back in. Welcome back to show number 227, where we are going to look at basically 20 years of moving average data and what that teaches us about stock reversals and momentum. It's definitely not what I expected. When I actually had the team start doing this research, I thought to myself, I pretty much know what's going to come out of this. I did not know exactly what was going to come out of this. So it's not what I expected, but at the end of the day, it actually makes sense when you start thinking about it. So I can't wait to dive in here and dig through this research with you. As always, we will publish all of this research completely for free. So you have all of the graphs and charts and everything we're looking at, the tables, over at optionalpha.com/show227. Again, that's just the number 227, optionalpha.com/show227. So let me first set the stage here. What the heck are we talking about with rubber bands and stretchiness and snapping back? Here's the concept that has fascinated me forever. I've always looked at markets and said, okay, if the market gets too stretched in one direction, it has a tendency to reverse. This mean reversion, the concept that you hear thrown around a lot. And I think there's a lot of validity to that. You see that in things that like RSI research that we've published that's totally free. You can get that at optionalpha.com. The RSI research we published shows that RSI is a great measure and indication of markets being too overbought or too oversold and then having some reversals and probably taking advantage of some of those. So what I was really after here was, okay, if we know that, and to maybe even piggyback a little bit on top of the podcast we did last week on trend trading filters for directional strategies, if we know that there's something to this trend thing that's out there, right? Trend trading or using moving averages, then is there an opportunity where markets get overly stretched? And what we define as stretched as being percentages above their moving averages. So it maybe it's not just that the market is above its 200-day moving average. But what happens when the market gets 20% above its 200-day moving average? What happens when the market gets 10% above its 5-day moving average? Does any of that mean that markets reverse, turn around, have a tendency to do that? Do they keep going? Is that a breakout zone? What does that mean for trading? And so that was really what we were trying to uncover. We were trying to uncover basically, as the market gets more stretchy around and overextended beyond above and below these different moving averages, does that lead to any sort of conclusions or insights as to what might happen next at those zones? And so I think if you think about this now, you might think, of course, if the market's 5% above its short-term moving average, it's going to move back down, but maybe not. I don't know. I'm not going to tell you. Either way, you're going to have to listen to this or check out the show notes page or both of these to figure it out, okay? So let me do this, and we'll start this just as an introductory to look at SPY by itself. And we've got four different histograms that are over on the show notes page, optionalpha.com/show227. You can check those out on the show notes page. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to test this just for SPY, because SPY is the popular one. It's the one everyone likes to look at. I like to look at too. But we just want to see, okay, what is the likelihood or how many times does the S&P start to be 10% or more above its different moving averages? And this was really fascinating. Like 10% in either direction, right? So 10% above the 15-day moving average in either direction, 10% above the 30-day in either direction, or the 50 or the 100, whatever. We just want to get a baseline of how rare or not is it for the S&P, the broad market, to be stretched above these different moving averages. So here's what we found. You can see this visually on the chart on the show notes page, but there's a bunch of histograms and they all kind of gravitate towards zero, obviously, because the moving average is going to move with the market. So you have to have that kind of in the back of your mind, is like the market and the moving averages are kind of one and the same, but the moving averages are a little bit more of a lagging indicator, right? Kind of following behind the new market data that's being produced every day. But here's the data, right? So 0.62% of the time, the S&P was 10% or more above its 15-day moving average. So very rare is it that the market gets first, even stretched above its 15-day moving average. This is much harder to do anyway, because you're only taking 15 days of data. So if the market moves up and the 15-day moving average is rolling forward, it's cutting off a new older price and replacing it with the new price, which is at a different price point. So it's very rare for the market to get stretched on a 15-day. When you looked at the 30-day moving average, which is a popular one for people to use, only 1.39% of the time was the S&P above its 30-day. So again, very rare. 2.02% of the time was it 10% or more above its 50-day moving average. A lot harder to get that far above the 50-day, because again, 50 is much slower than the 30. And when you looked at the 100-day moving average, only 3.83% of the time was the S&P more than 10% above its 100-day moving average. So it is equally rare for the S&P to be significantly beyond its moving averages. So when we started this analysis, we said, look at the S&P first. Let's see if the broad market, which includes 500 different securities in the S&P, right? If that basket of securities is the best indication of the market, can that tell us anything by the stretchiness of the market itself? And what we found is that the S&P is probably pretty tame. It can go through some pretty wild periods, but it's probably pretty tame. So having that as the baseline, this idea of like, okay, maybe there's nothing to this stretchiness. What we did is we extended out this research to 286 different tickers. Why 286 different tickers? Because 287 sounded terrible. No, because 286 was tickers we had data on, tickers we knew that went through the whole entire testing period, and tickers that had good liquidity, good open interest, right? Things like that, like good name tickers. Now, the only downside to doing this, and I'll just say this at the beginning so you understand, is that the 286 tickers, which was a combination and pretty good split of ETFs and companies, it wasn't just all ETFs, wasn't all companies, are all tickers that lasted this whole 20-year period. So there is a little bit of survivorship bias in this, that we didn't include, of course, tickers that didn't make it. So if a company went bankrupt and they didn't last this whole time period, well, that might have skewed the data by including only bankrupt or mostly bankrupt companies, where they just continue to go down the whole time. So I don't know if there's not a right or wrong way to do it. I'm just telling you, there is a little bit of survivorship bias here, that only the tickers who made it ended up making it into this 286 because they had enough data for the 20 years. But overall, it was about 5,000 trading days per ticker. So a lot of data in here, a lot of numbers that we were crunching. And of course, all the metrics that we show on the research are just averages across all underlying. So we didn't break them out. That's just too much data to break out. So we just want to get like the synopsis of, does this generally, like, is the pervasiveness of stretchiness or momentum or reversals, how does that work across all these? So here's what we did across those 286 tickers. We calculated the 5, the 15, the 30, the 50, and the 100-day moving average for each of those underlyings across the whole time period. And then using that data, what we did every day is calculated the number of times that the ticker was 5, 10, 15, or 20% above or below their major moving average. So think about it like this. If the 50-day moving average was at $100, like 100, and then we would calculate, okay, where is the current price of that underlying symbol and how far above or below that 50-day moving average is the current symbol. If the current symbol is 106, it's at 6% above the 50-day moving average. So that would count as being above the 5% above the 50-day moving average, but not 10%, right? So it kind of falls into that bucket. It was 6% above the 50-day moving average. So that's what we did. We were trying to, again, see how stretchy, like how far do things get stretched above or below these moving averages. And then what we did is we tracked the 30-day performance of the symbol after it reached these critical thresholds. So after it started getting really stretched in either direction, what was the performance of that ticker symbol, ETF, stock, whatever, 30 days following that observation? And that right there is what I think is the coolest part about the research that we did. And this is what you'll see on the actual chart when you go over to the show notes page at optionalpha.com/show227. You can see this visually in a table. We also made a little heat map so you can see it, had a little fun with it. But on the table there, what you'll see is you'll see down the left-hand side, you'll see the 5-day, the 15, the 30, the 50, the 100. And then across on the columns, you'll see negative 20, which means that the symbol, any symbols that had been lower than or more than 20% below its 5-day moving average, that number in there is the return on those symbols on average 30 days following that observation. So as soon as it dropped more than 20% below its 5-day moving average, that number in the table there shows the return on those tickers on average 30 days after that period. And then you get the negative 15%, negative 10, negative 5, 0, which is kind of right around like between 5 up or down 5%, 5% above, 10%, 15% above, and 20% above. So you get all of these different metrics essentially to show, okay, what happened during these time periods where the tickers got stretched. So here's what we saw in this table. And I'll go through it row by row. So I'll go through it moving average by moving average, because I think it is helpful to kind of walk through this a little bit. And this is, again, just my own perspective and analysis on this. You might see something different. You might see something that I didn't see or some pattern that I didn't see in here. So I think it's important that you look at this across the board here and just try to figure out like what works for you and what works for what you see out of this. So like, take a look at the show notes page. When you look at the 5-day simple moving average, when tickers are more than 20% below their 5-day moving average, which for the record did not happen all that often, like less than 1% of the time happened, you get an average return the next 30 days of 36.72%. Far and away, the best return over the next 30 days is when a ticker is more than 20% below its 5-day moving average. Now, this intuitively makes sense. Like if you think about it, it does intuitively make sense that you could have the highest possible returns directly after the biggest possible drawdowns in the shortest possible period of time. Remember, a 5-day moving average is going to react to new market prices very fast. Every day, the fifth day gets rolled off and replaced with the next fifth day. That's how it gets, the sixth day gets rolled off and replaced with the next fifth day. So as the market starts to move, the 5-day moving average is highly in tune with exactly where the market's moving. So a 20% price below the 5-day moving average is a pretty wild and significant drop. I mean, it has to be a 4, 5, 6 standard deviation drop for most tickers. And so what you actually saw in these cases is you saw that if it did get down to that level, then the snapback or the possibility of snapping back in the opposite direction was really big, right? And now some of those didn't work out, right? It's not that all of them worked out. That was the average. So you definitely saw some that continued lower, some that continued much higher. The average was 36.72%. If you continue going across the chart, for drops of more than 15% below the 5-day moving average, the average return was 22.47% in the next 30 days. Drops of more than 10%, the average return was 12.42%. Drops of more than 5% below the 5-day moving average, average return was 5.67%. So basically, every time that the market consistently moved in further and further and got stretchier and stretchier, if I can use that fancy terminology, the stretchier that the market got below its five-day moving average, the more likely it was that it was going to snap back in the opposite direction. If the market was around the five-day moving average, so within 5% up or down, it still had a positive return. This basically maybe suggests the positive drift of the market anyway, of like 1.46%. So just being slightly under or slightly over didn't really mean anything either direction. Now, here's the other really crazy part. I thought this was very interesting, so take it for what you want. As we started to go above the five-day moving average, what we actually saw was that the momentum that these securities had on average, as they got stretched above their moving average, continued to increase. Now, I did not expect this. I thought for sure a stock that goes 20% above its five-day moving average is likely to have potentially not as great of a return or maybe even a negative return in the next 30 days. Like it got overstretched, got overbought. Maybe there's some big news announcement, buy the rumor, sell the news type thing. So here's what happened though. If these securities on average were 5% above their five-day moving average, their next 30-day return was 3.06%. If these securities were 10% above their five-day moving average, this is an interesting one, their 30-day return was 5.2%. They actually increased momentum. They had an increase in momentum as they continued to move above their moving average. If the securities were 15% above their five-day moving average, their 30-day return following that period was 7.2%. Now remember, this is 15% above the moving average. Then another 30 days, the average return was 7.2%, which again suggests that it's continuing to build momentum. If they were 20% above their five-day moving average, which again is a huge, huge move to be 20% above a very fast moving average like a five-day, then their return the next 30 days was 8.78%. This, I like this a lot in that it shows the momentum that securities can have to the upside. Like the upside momentum here is crazy and pretty relevant and true with a five-day moving average. All right, so let's dig into the 15-day moving average just a little bit. 15-day moving average, for all intents and purposes, not to make this podcast insanely longer drawn out, had about the same characteristics as the five. You saw the 20% drop below the 15-day moving average as having the biggest snapback in returns of 17.31%, then 15% as 11.29%, and so on and so on. The same characteristics held true above the 15-day moving average, where as the security went further above its 15-day moving average, 5, 10, 15, 20%, the returns the next 30 days were better and better and better the further that it moved out. So you maybe call it breakout, you call it momentum, but essentially the further it moved above its 15-day moving average, the more likely it was to continue moving higher over the next 30 days. When you get to the 30-day moving average, which is a really popular one, again, you start to see the same characteristics play out, but the variance between the moves starts to now compress. And this is where I think not only do you visually see this start to happen on the 30-day moving average, and it really happens and in some cases reverses on the 50-day moving average, which we'll get to here in a second, but the 30-day is where you start to see this breakout from the moving averages start to compress the returns the next 30 days. So if the security was 20% below its 30-day moving average, still had a positive, nice snapback, 12.38% on average. If it was 15% below its 30-day moving average, same thing, nice snapback, 8.17%. This is now significantly less, of course, than the snapbacks that you had if they were below the 5-day or the 15-day moving average. So if you were below the 30, it didn't necessarily mean that you had a big snapback like if you were 15% below your five-day moving average. That makes sense logically because the five-day is going to be lower than the 30 as the stock is dropping. So you had the 5 and 10% below the 30-day moving average, 5%, 3%, right, snapbacks, still positive snapback reversals below the moving average. When you started to get to securities trading above their 30-day moving average, then you started to see the pace at which the momentum starts to decrease every 30 days or in the 30-day periods above different levels. But if these securities were 5% above their 30-day moving average, the next 30 days, the return on average was 1.66%. If they were 10% above their 30-day moving average, The next 30-day return was 2.22%. That difference, that delta between 2.22 and 1.66 is much smaller than the deltas we saw on previous moving averages. So the compression of that next sequential return over 30 days starts to go lower and lower as the security goes higher. So we don't maybe see the momentum difference here. It was still positive across 5, 10, 15, 20% above the moving average. You still saw increasing momentum across the 30-day moving average stretchiness. But the rate at which it was increasing momentum was not as great as some of the other ones. Okay, so at this point now, just to recap, if a security, and this is the broad strokes here, if a security is below its 5, 15, or 30-day moving average, it is likely to snap back and go the opposite direction in the next 30 days. If it is above 5, 10, 15, 20% above its 5, 15, or 30% 30-day moving average, it is likely to continue that trajectory over the next 30 days on average with increasing momentum. So that is a great takeaway for traders, because then you can see that not only visually on your charts, you can build this into your bots, you can figure out a way to start taking maybe advantage of these on averages. That was really cool. Now what we do is we start to look at what happens with the 50-day and what happens with the 100-day. And this is where things did start to shift and change. Now, when you look at the 50-day moving average and the 100-day moving average, so I'll kind of lump these two together so we can look at them in aggregate. They are obviously wildly different. They're double the moving average count, right? So 50 going to 100 is double. But in aggregate, if you had securities that were 20%, 15%, 10%, 5% below their 50 or 100-day moving average, you still saw the same reversal and snapback on average in the next 30 days, just like you saw for the 5 and 15 and 30-day moving averages. That held true. Like we would have expected, the magnitude of those reversals is not as great. So if you had a security that was 20% below its 100-day moving average, the return in the next 30 days is 8.21% versus securities that are 20% below their 5-day moving average had returns of 36.72%. Now, there's way more, a lot greater number of securities that would get 20% below their 100-day than 20% below their 5-day. So you had a bigger count, which means they kind of spread out the averages and spread out the returns a lot more distributed across actual observable outcomes. So in that case, we still recognize and still know that if a security gets really stretched below their 50 or 100, it is more likely that they snap back over the next 30 days than not across this testing period, right? Which again, maybe is a little bit of just this overall like positive drift of the market that you probably saw during this period overall, right? But it's still worth noting that that's what happened. When you get above the moving averages, the 50 and the 100, what you actually did see is you actually saw the metrics shift and reverse this time. The further that you got above the moving averages, these longer term moving averages, which might now actually suggest or allude to the fact that markets on these longer term moving averages can get stretchy to the upside, lose their momentum, and tend to snap back or not continue at the same pace. So here's how it worked, right? And I hope you guys are following along on this. I hope you love this. I geek out over this stuff, so I hope you do too. The 50-day moving average. If you were 5% above the 50-day moving average, the next 30-day return on average was 1.39%. That kind of sets the baseline. If you were 10% above the 50-day moving average, the next 30-day return was 1.5%. So there's still, at this point, a little bit of this, okay, we're increasing momentum. The further I am above the moving average, the more momentum I'm building, like we saw with the 5, 15, and 30-day moving average. But here's where it shifted. If you were 15% above your 50-day moving average, your 30-day average return dropped from 1.5% to 1.46%. So now we start to see that, hey, we get too far above these longer-term moving averages, we're actually likely not to continue the momentum. The momentum is stalling. And in fact, it's not continuing at the same pace. If you get 20% above your 50-day moving average, you have a 1.07% on average 30-day return, which means it is worse for the security to be 20% above its 50-day moving average than for is the security to be any other percentage above or below the moving average. Basically, if you get a security that's more than 20% above its 50-day moving average, that was the single worst average return over the next 30-day period, which is counterintuitive to some of the other things that we learned about early momentum. So there is this point at which we're starting to see that momentum, when too far stretched on maybe too long of a time period, maybe actually does not help, and you get more of a reversal starting to happen. Now, when you look at the 100-day moving average, again, focusing on all above the 100-day moving average, when the stock is 5% above its 100-day moving average, average return over the next 30 days, 1.54%. If it's 10% above its 100-day moving average, 1.56%. So a little bit of increase. If it's 15% above its 100-day moving average, 1.66% average return. So that actually is a little bit better than the 50-day. So a little bit more increasing momentum. But again, we get a big reversal here when the stock is 20% above its 100-day moving average and the return in the next 30 days drops to 1.5%, which I think was either the second or third lowest reading for the next 30 days is when a stock is too far stretched above its long-term 50 or 100-day moving average. So this, I thought, was insanely fascinating when you really separate these things into different compartments, shorter-term moving averages and longer-term moving averages, you actually get different outcomes when it comes to the momentum or the reversal factor that happens across most of these tickers. So what is interesting about all of this, and I will say that as like we kind of summarize and wrap some of these things up here, but I hope you guys took some good takeaways from this. What is really interesting is that what it definitely shows is that when symbols are lower than their moving averages, potentially really, really much lower, 10, 15, 20% below their moving averages, you tend to have these nice snapback reversals in the positive bullish direction, maybe the positive tilt or bullish float or drift of a market that's coming into it. There's definitely a little bit of survivorship bias that goes into there as well. Still, what is interesting on the other side of these moving averages is that the shorter term moving averages tend to suggest movements above those moving averages become increasing momentum environments where momentum is real and the market will continue climbing as it goes further and further above these moving averages, dragging the moving averages to higher and higher levels. We saw increasing momentum the further that these securities got above their shorter term moving averages. However, what is also really interesting is that when you look at the longer term moving averages, reversals were just as powerful when you got further above your longer term moving averages. You saw momentum actually stop or reverse or go the opposite direction on these longer term moving averages. So that in and of itself was really powerful too, where you have this kind of split here where shorter term moving averages had a little bit of a different characteristic set or outcome set versus these longer term moving averages had a little bit of a different characteristic or outcome set. So I thought that was really powerful, super impactful for how we look at momentum and how we look at reversals and how we look at markets and how you could potentially build these into your bots and your portfolios moving forward. Now, one final note here that I think is important to note is that in all environments, we never saw on average returns become negative in the next 30 days, even with the market being stretched 20% or down 20% or whatever. Again, maybe that's a little bit of survivorship bias, but it does point to the overall positive drift that the markets do generally have over a long enough time period with enough securities. And so that's a really important observation, is you really didn't find any negative drift environments here. You found mostly positive drift environments in all of these cases. It just depends on the magnitude of the drift that happened in these environments. So thought that was an interesting note, definitely one you should take away and kind of put in your back pocket and think about for your next strategies. All right, as always, I hope you guys really enjoyed this. This was a lot of numbers and research and a lot of data being thrown at you. So I'm sure whoever's going to do this transcript or AI's going to do this transcript or whatever is going to have a lot of fun just going through all the numbers and math and percentages and dates and moving averages. But if anything else, I think you guys get a lot out of this. If you go on over to the show notes page, take a look at the tables that we created for you. it'll pull a lot of this data together because you'll just visually see some of the things that we talked about here today that we spent a painstakingly amount of time just going through and kind of trying to describe to you. But I hope you did enjoy it. I hope you got something out of this that you can take with you in your trading. I definitely learned some stuff that was brand new that I didn't think was the case. It makes a lot of sense when you think about it intuitively. Now thinking about the positive drift of the markets, the survivorship bias of some of these, just the fact that momentum is real, just like we talked about last week on the last podcast, so like trend trading and trend filtering, that's a real positive thing that you can add to your portfolios in most cases. So momentum is also something that has been shown, a lot of research around momentum showing like it is a thing that you can add to your portfolio. And we're kind of proving that in some cases here, that we get some factors of momentum, some factors of reversal, just depends on timeframes and how you look at them and how you can incorporate them into your trading. So overall, hope you guys enjoy this. Please share this with a friend or a trading buddy or somebody you know. Head on over to show notes page at optionalpha.com/show227. If you want to get all the research, all the data, all the questions, everything is in that show notes page. So you have it right there for you.
Thanks for listening to the Option Alpha podcast. If you liked what you heard, please drop by iTunes and leave a rating or comment. Plus, you can get everything. Free email updates for future shows, transcripts, video tutorials, case studies, and more. Just visit our website at optionalpha.com.
All right, that's a wrap for this week's podcast episode here at Option Alpha. But before you go, here's what we've been up to. As we said last week, we have a brand new version of the platform that just came out. So everyone's been loving the new exit options with trailing stops on 1 minute, plus new automation editor, changes to the trade ideas, which give you more filtering capabilities around positions. We also, and I forgot to add this in the last one, we also have some new recipes. In particular, everyone's been loving the FOMC recipes and date recipes. So you can actually just tell the bot, like, is today a day when the Fed is going to have an interest rate announcement? And if it is, then don't do anything. Or if it is, do something different, whatever. We added those new decisions in there. Everyone's been adding those in there. It's a really cool way to solve a problem that you guys have been after for a while. And you don't have to do it with crazy tags or crazy logic. We just gave you a really simple decision. Is today the Fed announcement day or meeting day, or tomorrow? Is it in 3 days? Is it in 5 days? Was it 2 days ago? Whatever you want to do, just simply add it to your bots to let them start trading for you. Also, if you haven't joined us for a live workshop, please do that too. We also record these all the time. This is where we do hands-on training with bots and automations and different concepts like tagging or adjustments or rolling positions or whatever. Head on over to optionalpha.com/workshops. You can take a look at all the workshops that we have scheduled, join an upcoming workshop, or watch a workshop recording. If you can join us live, either way, get yourself into the community, get your feet wet with automated trading, start using some of these tools to help you improve your trading, your consistency, your performance. Probably will help you psychologically just feel better so you don't have to deal with all the mundane nuances of trading every single day. That is our goal. So as always, I truly hope you guys did enjoy today's show. Got at least one thing out of it that you can apply right now to help you consistently play smarter trades. And until next time, happy trading.